And today is family talk. I want to work through this today and just figure out how we need to talk to one another. Again, last week we mentioned being hostage by blood and feeling like, wait a minute, I don't like what's coming at me, but I feel stuck because I'm hostage because we're family, and I just kind of have to take whatever's coming, and no one likes that. No one is happy with that. That's not what God intended for our family. So how do we talk to one another? Next Sunday, as I mentioned, is Family Fifth, and it's going to be a special day, and I hope to put much of what we've been teaching the last few weeks into practice next Sunday. So I would love to see you in the house. I sincerely hope, my prayer is that we are communicating to the whole family. This kind of teaching is important because we're all dealing with this on some level. We've talked about the traditional family and even to the point that none of us even know exactly what is a traditional family in 2024. The family has changed so much, whether there are many members in the family or it's just a family of one or two or a couple or maybe a single parent managing kids. Whatever your family looks like, let me just say today that you are normal. You are normal because normal is inclusive of a lot of things. And normal is defined now, you know, with many people looking all kinds of ways. And better is the fact that you are not alone. If you're a single parent, you're not alone. There's others in this room. If you are a marriage trying to manage young kids and the marriage is stressed, you're not alone. It's in this room. If you're in an older season of life or maybe an empty nest and that's new for you, you are not alone. None of us are alone. And I say that and I qualify that because I don't want to normalize dysfunction. And let me explain what I mean. You may come from a less than ideal family situation. And if you come from a less than ideal family situation, I pray that you want better for your kids. I pray that every parent, I pray that every grandparent, I pray for everyone who is head of household or managing a family, I pray that you want better for your family. And you may say, well, I survived. It was hard, but I survived. Well, you know what? There's people that survive gunshot wounds too. But most don't. You can't just assume that your kids are going to survive the same difficulty that you survived. And why would we want them to? Why would we put them through that as though it is some badge of honor? I had it hard, so you're going to have it hard. They were mean to me, so I'm going to be mean to you. They abused me, so I have permission to abuse you. No one believes that. No one wants that. No one desires that. But our culture works hard to normalize anything and everything because they don't want anyone to feel less than. They normalize it because they want everyone to be included. It's intentional. But the challenge with normalizing everything is that you dumb down everything and give the next generation nothing to shoot for. It's the trophies for all culture. We just normalize it, and then no one know. Wait a minute. I'm dysfunction now is the goal. Struggle now is the goal. And that's one of the reasons that the family is in so much trouble. The reason that the family is struggling. Hear me today. Jesus taught and pointed toward an ideal. He pointed us toward a goal, but he never condemned anyone who fell short of that ideal. He constantly provided grace and mercy and strength to allow us to fresh start, allow us to renew, allow us to revive, allow us to learn, allow us to grow so that we can continue pursuing and reaching and striving for that ideal life that he intended for us. So how do we discuss the fuss? I know we talked about what the fuss is last Sunday. We talked about the reason or the reasons why we fuss, and we all do. It's common to every family. But we left with the realization last Sunday that the reason we're quarreling is because any single one of us are not getting our way. We're not getting our way. How many had the opportunity this week to just say, you know what, I'm going to let God deal with you? Was anyone brave enough to actually say those words? I'm going to let God deal with you. I had some travel this week. I've had multiple opportunities this week to say, I'm going to let God. I'm going to let God handle this. I'm going to let God deal with you. So how do we do that? Where do we go from here, specifically in our families? I'm not necessarily talking about the workplace relationship, but of course, there are principles here that can apply to that. I'm not necessarily talking about, grocery store, just occasional interaction relationship, even though those things are important as well. I'm talking about the family unit. And here's what I believe. Our homes can become the safest place on earth to communicate. Your home should be the safest place on earth to communicate. You're like, what do you mean? We talk, or I mean, you know, we yell. We text from one room to the other. Y'all know I'm telling the truth. Is that not good enough? No, it's not good enough. It's what we've devolved down to. It's the habit that we've kind of fallen into. It's the routine that we have fallen into, but we need a safe space that we can communicate. And the word safe is intentional because spouses need safety. Our kids need safety. Everyone in the house is fighting a battle. I promise you, Dad, it's not just you trying to figure out how to make all the ends meet. Your wife is fighting a battle and your kids are fighting a battle. No matter how young they are or how old they are, kids are fighting a battle. And it's not necessarily with one another, although that is a possibility. Sometimes we have these personal battles going on that have either nothing or very little to do with each other as far as family is concerned, but we have work pressures and school pressures, and we have extended or even non-family issues that we are trying to deal with. And when we come home, we don't want to feel anxious and we don't want to feel stressed. We may be stressed from outside and external situations, but we are safe when we get home. When I get home, I want to be in my safe place. I don't want to be stressed. I don't want to come from the stress of work and go home to the stress of family. Family should be peaceful, and family should be renewing, and family should be rewarding. And so much of this is dependent upon how we communicate with one another. Here's what Paul said in Ephesians 4 and 29. He said, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. Now, language is going to vary from family to family. You know, we may come to your house, and now in this house, we don't say B-U-T-T. Cool. While I'm in your house, it's Heine. Everybody's got the rules in their house. Our house is kind of funny. We're all a little sarcastic, and it's funny sarcastic. It's not mean sarcastic, but we'll have fun with one another, and we're all open to being made fun of, you know, to a degree, but we have a good time. But I realize that can be taken too far. Those limits can be pushed. My kids are funny. Jude is hilarious and keeps us laughing. Paul said, I want you to apply this to the conversations in your home. Is everything that you are saying good and helpful? Lord, the message could end right now and all of us just, you know. Is the way that I am communicating, is it good and helpful? Is it an encouragement? Is it a strength to my spouse or to my kids? Or is it foul and is it abusive? I just, not in my notes, but I just say this just as an addendum. Dads, your position as king. Mom, your position as queen is not in jeopardy if you take time to listen to what your kids have to say. And I get it. You may have been raised in a culture where you were to be seen and not heard, and when you turn 18, you can have an opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, that is dangerous. Because what happens when they turn 18 is they choose their opinion that they've not been trained for and not been allowed to express and bounce off of and talk through. And some of my favorite conversations with my kids, and we have them often. We may get into biblical conversations, and we may get into political conversations. We may get into just a current event or cultural conversations, and there's an opportunity for them to say, you know what, I don't agree with that. Well, let's talk about that. Let's kick that around. I can hear what they have to say. I'm not waiting until they reach 25 before I listen to what they have to say. I'm training them now. I'm leading them now. I'm trying to create a culture of conversation now so that when some of those challenges come at 18 and 21, 25, and whatever the age is that it happens, that there's already an open dialogue so that there is a safe place to communicate. Here's what Paul said in Colossians. He said, be gracious in your speech. The goal is to bring out the best in others in a conversation, not put them down, not cut them out. That's Colossians 4 and 6. He said, bring the best. That's the goal, to bring the best. Bring out the best in others in conversation. I'm not going into a conversation looking for the gotcha moment. I'm not going into a conversation listening for your mistake or listening for your mispronunciation so that I can pounce on that, so that I can criticize that. It's not fair. It's not kind. It's not bringing out the best in someone in this conversation. And I guarantee you that if we would pay close attention to our communication, if we would pay close attention to how we communicate and the tone that we use in our communication, it would make all the difference in the world in our homes. Because we have this disruptive communication. What is that? Proverbs 3:3, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. You got to make sure there's kindness and truth. It's always with you. It's always in your mind. It's always in your heart. It's always on the tip of your tongue. It's kindness and truth. And I'm gonna keep those around where I literally feel them almost as a weight. He described it, bind them around your neck almost like a scarf or something that you would tie on your neck, a leash, if you will. That's there. That kindness and truth. It keeps you pulled back. It keeps you from veering into the disruptive communication. Not that I condone this. I've never owned one in any one of our dogs. Our dogs were all too dumb to ever need this. But you see those choker collars, you know, they have them sometimes on the big aggressive dogs. And when that is pulled just taut enough, it just creates a pressure on the neck of that dog and gets his attention. I almost see that kind of thing as a word picture that I wear that, and when I start to veer into communication that is disruptive, when I start to veer into communication that is not safe, and I feel that. The problem is we feel it and we just keep going anyway. We know what we're saying is not kind, but well, it needs to be said. Does it? Does it need to be said? Does it need to be said that way? Does it need to be said at that volume? I feel the Lord in here. Just teaching on family communication. So the first kind of communication in disruptive communication is harsh communication. Harsh communication. When we're not leading with kindness and truth, when we're not being gracious, when we're not bringing out the best in others in our conversation, then it comes out as harsh. I'm not an expert, but I've learned that men need to hear in conversation, men need to hear, I believe in you, I like you, and I'm on your side. Not I love you, but I don't like you. Men need to hear, I believe in you, I like you, and I'm on your side. Women need to hear, I will do anything for you. I will fight for you. I love you. It's just the difference. It's the difference. What men need to hear, what women need to hear. But when we speak harshly, our husbands and sons hear, I don't believe in you. I don't like you. And I'm not on your side. And when men speak harshly to wives and daughters, they hear, you are not loved. I will not fight for you. And you are not worthy of my kindness. And I hear you saying, but wait, I don't feel that way. Well, let me ask you a question. Are they hearing what you feel, or are they hearing what you say and how you say it? Because that's what has to be addressed when it comes to harsh communication. And then there's dishonest communication. Dishonest communication is disruptive communication. Dishonest, untruthful, held back. There's really two ways to be honest. There's the obvious way. Don't keep secrets. Don't be deceptive. Don't be deceptive. The truth will always prevail. Every student in the room has heard your parents say, if you lie to me, I'm gonna find it out. My wife made a deal with our kids way back. Early. Now, if you tell me, if you're honest, if you tell it up front, the consequences are going to be much less. Doesn't mean there won't be consequences, but they're going to be much less severe than if you get caught. But what it created that I see the reward of now at 18 and 20 years old is honest communication, open dialogue. Hey, I'm struggling with this, or hey, I need this. But dishonest communication, it is a threat to all of that. So don't keep secrets and don't be deceptive. And then equally as important, be honest about your thoughts and your feelings. And being honest about how you feel and what you think, it should not start a war. I know it does, but it should not start a war. And I'm not talking about, does this dress make me look fat? Guys, lie, the Lord will understand. Just go ahead. If you get to heaven and that's what keeps you out, send into me. I'm a litigator. I'll make your case. So disruptive communication is harsh or dishonest communication. So we were in James last week, and James gives us some of the best wisdom about communication. James 1, we were James 4 last Sunday, but James 1, verses 19 and 20, says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." Let me read this in the Message translation. "Lead with your ears, follow up with your tongue, and let anger straggle along in the rear." Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. So when it comes to communication, number one, we need to change our patterns. We need to be quick to listen. If my pattern is to fly off the handle, if my normal pattern is short fuse, if my normal pattern is the sharpest tongue in the South, it's time to change. It's time to change. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Yes, old dogs can learn new tricks. "Pastor, I've always been this way." Well, it's time to change. Because someone is suffering. Someone is unhappy. Someone is living in misery. They're just too scared to tell you that. And who wants their spouse or their children to be scared of them? It's not what you want. That's not the idea. It's not what God intended. You don't want to be scared of God. You want to know that you've got a place to come and bring your needs and bring your situations and bring your circumstances. So I have to change the pattern. And I know this is hard. I know, believe me, I know this is hard. So usually we try to stop bad communication. We leave the room, we go on a walk, we remove ourselves from the tense and terse discussion. But you know what? That doesn't work. Because we have to replace a negative pattern with a positive one. And the positive pattern is closing our mouths and tuning into what others are trying to say and listening to them instead of tuning out or speaking over someone. I want to be a pattern interrupter. Wait a minute. I'm changing my pattern. I'm changing. I'm changing the way I respond. I'm changing the way I react. Because listening allows us to really hear and then validate. It allows us to give others permission to feel what they are feeling and then join them in their feelings and match their emotion. This happened to me just about a week ago. Elle called me from college and she was really frustrated because in this school they've got a new system going and for some reason she was transferring credits from one college to another, and this is the first time they've handled that kind of transaction, and so it's been a bit of a learning curve for them, and she's been the test rat, if you will, who's it's being tested on, and it really, really been frustrating. And so she called, and it was like, hey, let me give you the update in the ongoing saga. And so she's telling me about this person that she talked to and this person that she talked to, and I'm making mental notes of the names that she's giving, and she's talking through it, and I'm trying to give her strategy, and well, you should say this, and you should respond that way. And finally, after several minutes of update, I said, tell you what, Elle, when we hang up, text me the phone number that you have for that name, and text me the phone number that you have for that name, and I am going to call them, and I am going to talk to them. I wasn't mad at anybody. It wasn't an aggressive thing. I wasn't calling to fuss with anybody. Just, I don't want my baby girl to be stressed anymore. She should be going to school and learning and not having to do all the administrative stuff. And then I have to slow down and realize, wait a minute, she's always going to have to do the administrative stuff. She's learning something. She's figuring something out. She's working a problem. But still, we got to get somewhere. We got to handle this. We got to get something done. And so she agreed, yeah, okay, I'll send you those numbers. And then we hang up, and it's a while later, and I'm realizing, wait a minute, she's not sent me those numbers. So I text her, send me those numbers. And it's a long time before she responded. And then she said, Dad, I don't want you to call them. I just wanted you to hear me. I just needed somebody to listen. And Dad had to say, well, you big dummy. Once again, you're trying to fix it and you're trying to solve it, because I'm a fixer, I'm a litigator, I'm ready to dive in and argue whatever needs to be argued and make the case. And that's not what she needed in that moment. She needed someone to listen. And so I said, absolutely, no problem, yes. I saw her just a few days ago, and that thing is working out. It's coming together. She's found a solution, and it's all working out. Guess what? Dad didn't do anything but listen. Dad didn't call anybody, send an email. He just listened, and somehow she worked through it and got it fixed. Because it's important to join people in their pain. It's important to join people in their sadness. It's important to join people in their frustration rather than dismissing their feelings. That's a pattern interrupter, to join someone in how they're feeling. When you come home from work, husband, and she starts telling you about her day, you think she's given you a task. You know, the kids have done this and this, and you move into, oh, well, let me take this belt off and let me handle business. No, no, no. That may not be what she's asking you to do. The problem is she's been talking to 5-year-olds all day, and she's ready to talk to a 45-year-old and have adult conversation. Just need someone to listen. I can't just listen to the words. I need to listen for the emotion and the meaning that is attached to the emotion. Those are pattern interrupters. Don't worry, fellas. She's not going to invite you to go get your nails done with her next week. It's not what this is going to turn into. But it is something to pray about. Lord, what pattern do I need to change that will help me hear better? What will make me hear better? With the most important conversations I'm going to have all day, the conversations I have with my family. The conversations I'm going to have with my kids, the conversation I'm going to have with my wife, those are the most important conversations I'm going to have. The ones I'm going to have with you are valuable. They're meaningful to me. They're important to me. But the most important conversations are going to be the conversations around the lunch table today or the afternoon board game or the evening walk in the neighborhood. Those are the important conversations. I have to protect those, and I have to guard those, and I have to bring my listening ear to those. And so, Lord, what pattern do I need to change to help me hear better? I'm not praying, Lord, let them speak it better. I need to hear it better. I've got to change the pattern. Number two, it's only three of these, so I got to create new language. He said, be quick to listen, be slow to speak. I need new language. I know you have a reply. Again, we're clapback nation. But is the reply warranted? Is this the right time to reply? And is the reply on the tip of my tongue the right reply? I've always got a reply. It comes quick. But is this the right time? I got to change and create new language. There's five levels of communication. They say there's common conversation, small talk. There's nightly news, that's facts, just giving you the facts. This is where you need to be at this time. Pick up kid, that's nightly news. The first two are not very satisfying, but look out, there's more coming. The third level of communication is cautious disclosure. This is where I'm going to venture sharing my opinion and my concern. I'm going to express those things, taking a slight risk that you are going to disagree with me. I'm taking the risk that you are going to vehemently disagree with me. I'm taking the risk that you're going to make fun of me, or I'm going to be ostracized in some way for the opinion or the concern that I am sharing. And then, for there is high risk, high reward. That's where feelings are shared. It's deeper communication. You say, well, I'm just not emotional. Let me go back to nightly news. Let me go back to the occasional cautious disclosure. I'm just not emotional. Well, I disagree that you're not emotional. You may need some work around acknowledging and expressing your emotion, but everyone has emotion on some level. And then five are truth in love talks. That's where there's total vulnerability. And you can apply these to your spouse, love, romantic relationship, if you're married or pursuing that or dating someone seriously. But you can apply these to your kids as well. Is my conversation with my kids just nightly news, just facts? Hey, you got a paper due. Get to it. That paper's due tomorrow. Hey, what's going on with these grades? It's just facts. It's just facts. Maybe at some point I need to slow down and say, well, hey, whoa. What's going on? Let's talk. How's it going? Why are you stressed? Why are you feeling what you're feeling? And then if they answer and they tell you how they're feeling, don't meet them with retribution or punishment for that feeling, but let them share that completely and fully. And you say, look, I don't want any of that. That's of no interest to me. I just want to work hard and come home to a good supper. But what about the other person that you're asking to put up with you? It's not fair to them. Because if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always had. Change the pattern. Create new language. And finally, challenge your own heart. So he said, be quick to listen, be slow to speak, and then be slow to get angry. Challenge your own heart. We need new patterns, and we need new thoughts, and we need better beliefs. And I want you to hear me, because this is where the grace comes in. This is not going to happen overnight. Everyone will need lots and lots of grace. Some of us will mess this up on the car ride home today. It's hard to change patterns. It's hard to do it a new way, a better way. But I need to challenge my own heart, because patterns are powerful. Patterns are powerful, but there is hope, because we need the ability to confess, and we need to be able to ask for forgiveness, and we need the opportunity to rebuild connection. For too many of us, the reason there is stress, it's not any current thing, it's some old thing. It's not something that happened yesterday, it's something that happened a year ago, and we're still upset about it. It's unresolved conflict. An unresolved conflict becomes resentment really fast. And resentment, ladies and gentlemen, is a relationship killer. Because resentment allows you to get to the place that you can function on a day-to-day basis. Does the car need gas? Is it time to change the oil? I'm going to go out and mow. Hey, would you drop these clothes at the cleaners? Hey, when you go to the grocery store, would you mind getting... We learn to function, but our fuse is so short that when something happens, it's lit. And the spouse that doesn't know you're still mad about something that happened a year ago is saying, what? Why are you so mad about this little thing? Because it's not just that little thing. But the only one that knows that is you. I'm way out in front of my skis today. But this is real life. What if we allowed God to heal it? What if we allowed God to heal it? What if we allowed God to fix it? What if we allowed God to restore? What if we allowed God to renew? If we allowed God to change the pattern. I love Psalm 103. This is a few verses, but just hear this. It's on the screen for you as well. The Lord is compassionate and merciful. He's slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. He will not constantly accuse us nor remain angry forever. He does not punish us for all our sins. He does not deal harshly with us as we deserve. For his unfailing love toward those who fear him is as great as the height of the heavens above the earth. He has removed our sins as far from us as the east is from the west. The Lord is like a father to his children, tender and compassionate to those who fear him. For he knows how weak we are. He remembers we are only dust. That's how God deals with us. Not harsh, not unkind. And that's how he's calling us to deal with others. Lord. We need you today because we have some patterns we need to deal with. We have some patterns we need to change, and we have some new language we need to create in our heart, Lord. Our heart needs to be challenged toward godliness. None of this is easy. In fact, this is hard work. But hard work is worth it for the reward, for the payday, for the blessing on the other side. In the case of our family, the blessing, Lord, is our strong marriage, our great communication with our kids, our offspring running toward their dreams and their callings. And I pray, Lord, that we hear you today, that moms and dads hear you, that junior high and high school students hear you, that we are quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. In Jesus' name.